We're very excited, as always, anytime we can talk college football, football in general, and making his annual appearance here back on the show. Bubba and I are so excited to welcome back Phil Steele. Phil, thank you so much for taking the time. I know the busiest time of year for you.
Yeah, actually, it's the lightest time of year for me because, football season, I've got 12 games I'm watching all day long on Saturday, and then watching replays of the games and breaking down the teams. During the magazine season, I'm working 70, 80 hours a week and over the 7 months. Right now, the radio show season, just doing about 6 to 8 radio shows a day talking football, so it's a lot of fun for me.
Okay, so the hardest part is behind you. It's getting ready for the next, I guess you're already thinking about 2023. We're trying to have the 2022 season kickoff. We're very excited to have you on. Obviously, this time of year, you know, Phil, thinking about you coming on. This time of year is kind of like if you're thinking about baseball. Spring training is so exciting because if you're a Major League Baseball fan, you think that your team may have a shot to win the World Series, or you're hoping. Unfortunately, I'm a Nationals fan, so that's a whole other show, as they say. But anyway. When it comes to our case, starting out with East Carolina, you're one of our favorites, not only because your knowledge, but also for the fact you've been really bullish on Mike Houston from the get-go, from the jump. And I just wanted to start right there with your relationship with Mike.
I appreciate that. And, yeah, you're right. It's always a lot more fun when the games are being played, and we're pretty close to that right now. But, yeah, talking to Coach Houston since year one, and, you know, he didn't step into a great situation. He wanted to have a defense that was bigger in the defensive front seven, and they were a small, speedy defense that was poor against the run, which really didn't mesh with what Coach Houston wanted. And so you knew there was going to be some growing pains, like the 4-8 and the 3-6 in the first season, but you could see the progress. And what I do when I talk to the head coaches, I send them over my team pages, which have every player on them, all my notes on the players, where they ranked out of high school, every stat they have. And you could tell from year one to now this year, year four, the transformation of the roster from this East Carolina team. Bigger up front, the defensive front seven, much more capable defensively. And offensively, I love the weapons they have. You know, you look at quarterback Holton Ahlers and then the running backs with Mitchell and Harris. I think he's done a tremendous job building this team, and you see it each and every year that I talk to him.
You know, that's so true, Phil, because when we were here, it was pitiful. The defensive line, we had like three good defensive linemen when Coach came. And I remember Coach say, back in the 90s, he would say that you can't throw defensive linemen on trees. So, that would be a nice luxury if we could. But you're right about depth. It's been amazing to watch the process of the transformation for teams. And I think Pirate Nation knew that it was going to take time. And he's done a nice job even dealing with the pandemic and having to deal with all that mess with the scholarships reduction. They've had a lot of hard conversations with players and playing time and the like, and with the NCAA making them bring those scholarship numbers back down. But how do you feel overall? I know that you, Pirate Nation, was very happy to hear of other media. I've heard you say that you give a chance for the Pirates to – you think the Pirates are going to beat NC State on September 3rd?
No, I said they have a great chance. I said that, Vegas has North Carolina State a 10.5-point favorite. I only have NC State a 3-point favorite in the game. So it's a game I think East Carolina clearly has a shot at home. I still think NC State, I'd favor them slightly in the game. But I do think East Carolina has a great shot at that game. Anytime you're a 3-point dog, in my mind, you have a shot of winning the game. But overall, I mean, when you look at this East Carolina roster, I think they could be a sneaky contender in the American Conference. You look at last year, for example, they delivered for me on a weekly basis against the spread. I believe they won 7 straight games against the spread. And a couple of their losses, like against UCF last year, a game they could easily have won. The game against Houston, I thought, is another game they could have won. They lost that one in overtime. And that kept the line value on East Carolina last year. Now you've got 15 returning starters coming back. The home edge is starting to coming back. It's almost like it was during the heyday of Ruffin McNeil when the Pirate Nation was completely behind them. And I think East Carolina's home edge is strong this year. And then you look at the schedule. I mean, they play USF Tulane on the road, Temple on the road in American Conference play. They do play Cincinnati at home on the road, but they get Houston and UCF at home. I think your top three teams in the American Conference this year are Cincinnati, Houston, and UCF. And East Carolina showed last year they could play with Houston. They could play with UCF on the road. They get them both at home. I'm pretty bullish about East Carolina's chances this year of contending in the American Conference.
It's funny you say that because there's a lot of folks in Pirate Nation that are not happy with hearing that the media picked the Pirates to finish sixth. But although I think it's good to be where you can overperform than to be a top favorite and then you underperform. So maybe a chip on the shoulder, Phil, for the summertime, and hopefully we can the Pirates can do better than sixth place in the American this year.
Oh, absolutely. I've got them in third. And so, I mean, I'm much more bullish on them, fourth. And I think that when you take a look at Coach Houston, he had to be thrilled that they were pick six, because that's just more, as you mentioned, motivation, chip on your shoulder type of thing. So that's a plus for East Carolina to be picked lower like that.
Let's talk. I know we're tight on time with you as far as I want to give an overview of the different conferences in America. UCF and Cincinnati, Houston, who do you like to win it all in the American?
You know, I've actually copped out on that one because it's such a tough thing to do. I have them in three-way tie for first. So, you know, when you look at Cincinnati, they're a team that, they lose a ton. They lose their best cornerback combo in the country in Kobe Bryant and Sauce Gardner. They lose Sanders up front on the defensive end spot. Brooks also from the defensive line. They lose a quarterback in Desmond Ridder. They lose their MVP of the team, Jerome Ford, at running back, Alex Pierce at receiver. There's a lot of holes on the Cincinnati. But going over the roster with Coach Fickell each year, he's really built this thing, much like Coach Houston's doing. And I think that they'd be pretty close to last year. Not up to last year's standards, but close enough where they're going to be a threat to win the conference. UCF, I think, has a great shot at winning it as well. 17 returning starters. I remember last year, they were hit hard by injuries. And Gus Malzahn last year brought in a ton of P5 transfers. And he's brought in a ton of P5 transfers again this year. They get those injured players back. I don't think they're going to lose their quarterback in week three like they did last year. They get Cincinnati at home. And keep in mind, in the bounce house the last 5 years, this team is 30-2 when they've had a crowd. So I think they're in good shape there. They avoid Houston in league play. I think UCF, I rank them as my number one non-power or group of five team out there this year. And then Houston, you know, you're looking at a fact that this is a veteran team. The UH average is 22 years old per starter. It's an old veteran football team. They've got eight captains on this year's squad. Clayton Tune is back. Probably would have liked them better if Alton McCaskill didn't suffer an ACL in the spring. I don't think he's going to be able to play this year. We'll see. But they've got Tank Dell back. They've got Sack Avenue on the defense. And they avoid both UCF and Cincinnati in league play. So they've got a great shot at getting to that title game. And then, like I said, the other team that I would look at in the American Conference, clearly East Carolina, getting Houston and UCF at home. And they do have to play Cincinnati on the road. But if you win those home games against UCF and Houston, all of a sudden East Carolina vaults into the American title game.
That'll be great. So what you're saying is hopefully Pirate fans can make plans for the championship game, where that maybe it's in Greenville. But so I take it you like them bowling again this year.
Oh, absolutely. Bowling is not a question mark when it comes to this year's team. Okay. They come in number 18 on my experience chart. The only games I have an underdog heading into the year are NC State at BYU and at Cincinnati. I've got a couple of toss-up games on the schedule, the at Tulane game and home against UCF, but clearly East Carolina is going to be in a bowl game this year. The question is whether or not they can contend in the American Conference.
All right, and let's move on to the Atlantic Coast Conference. Will be closest to us after that. Who do you like there?
You know, I think it's going to be a return to the powerhouses this year across the board. You look at last year when I talked to the head coaches, And this year I talked to 120 of the 131 head coaches. But last year when I talked to the head coaches, I would say 90% of them said, Phil, this is the deepest team I've ever had. We went three deep in the spring. We'd never been able to do that before. And the reason for it was COVID. Everybody had everybody back last year due to COVID. And what happened was every team had 17, 18, 19 returning starters. The teams that didn't were the powers. Clemson didn't even win the ACC, but they didn't even make the ACC title game. Ohio State didn't win the Big Ten, but they didn't even make the Big Ten title game. Same thing with Oklahoma, not even in the Big 12 title game last year. And Alabama, as it was, they lost to Texas A&M. They had a close win over Florida where they needed a two-point conversion to stop it. They had a close win over LSU and then should have lost to Auburn, a game that they ended up winning in four overtimes after a big comeback and a last-minute touchdown forced overtime. So the powers weren't the powers last year because they lost players. The NFL was. Everybody else was experienced. This year, the powers are now as experienced as everybody else. Give you an example. Clemson goes from number 115 on my experience chart all the way up to number 40, and now their big thing with them last year was quarterback play. DJ Uiagalelei last year had a 9-10 ratio. This year he's lost 20 to 25 pounds in the spring, worked on getting the ball out of his hands faster. Should be that type of quarterback we saw in 2020 when he was taking on Boston College and Notre Dame. If not, he's got Cade Klubnik behind him, who's my number one quarterback out of high school and was in for the spring and impressive. They have an improved offensive line, improved running back core, and defensively they got the best defensive line in the country and a top 10 linebacker and defensive back unit. Overall, I see Clemson returning the power in the ACC and winning the whole thing. Their biggest challengers are probably NC State in the Atlantic. NC State, once again, a veteran team, 17 returning starters coming back, including QB Devin Leary and one of the best defenses in the country. And then on the Coastal Division, I think it comes down to Miami of Florida against Pitt in the final game of the season. Miami gets that one at home, which is a nice plus to have. I think Mario Cristobal steps into a good situation. He took over a finesse team at Oregon, turned him into a power team at the line of scrimmage. When I talked to Coach Cristobal, he liked what he inherited on both the offensive line and defensive line, and then he supplemented it with some great transfers coming in. So they're strong at the line of scrimmage. They've got one of the nation's best quarterbacks in Tyler Van Dyke, and they get Pitt at home. And with Pitt, while they lose Addison and Pickett, I mean, they've got the second-best defensive line in the country. They've got Keaton Slovis coming in from USC. Avinconda and Davis in the running back spot. They've got all five starters back on the offensive line. So they're strong at the line of scrimmage. And the question would be, can they win on the road? Well, last year on the ACC road, they not only won their four games, they won them by an average of 23 points per game. So I think Pitt-Miami is going to be a great game in the season final.
Sounds like a lot of maybe it's something about this year, Phil, but I'm so excited about football from my son's first year of Pop Warner. I mean, like 9 years old, playing to all the way to professionals. But this particular case with college, triangle teams with Duke and North Carolina, I guess it's pretty much for Duke. I know a rebuild and North Carolina, Mack Brown, how do you feel about the Tar Heels this year?
Yeah, and with Duke, I think he hit it right on the head. Coach Elko has good expectations. Remember, he was part of that transformation at Wake Forest that really turned that around, and I think he's got that possibility, but he has an inexperienced squad with just 11 returning starters coming back, 6 on offense, 5 on defense, and it looks like a rebuilding year for Duke. Now, North Carolina, you know, if they play up to their potential, they could be a potential threat in the Coastal. They disappointed everyone last year, and they entered preseason top 10 and finished just 6-7 on the season. Coach Brown told me that defensive line sure looks pretty, but they need to play that way. And they've got some big boys, some nasty guys up front on the defensive line. If they play like they look when the season rolls around, they could be dangerous on the defensive side. And offensively, you know, the big question is who's going to replace Sam Howell? And Drake May, Jacoby Criswell battling out for the job. If they can get good quarterback play, this year they lose a 1,000-yard rusher. But, heck, last year they were replacing 2,000-yard rushers. Last year they replaced their top two receivers. This year the top two receivers are back. So they've got a better supporting cast around the quarterback this year. I think North Carolina's got the potential. They do make my most improved list. I think they'll get to a bowl game. And I see them getting going from 6 wins to maybe 7 or 8 this year.
And one more in North Carolina as far as when it comes to ACC with Wake Forest, where they're losing their quarterback. How do you feel about their chances now without him?
Yeah, that's big with Sam Hartman because he was such a huge part of the offense. If he can return, that'd be great. But if not, You know, Mitch Griffiths is a guy that's gritty, competitive, accurate. He can find the throwing lanes. But, I mean, you can't replace the experience that Sam Hartman had, nor the success. I mean, he really was doing a phenomenal job there. So hopefully for Wake, they somehow get Sam Hartman back this year. But if not, I think he overachieves. I mean, talking to Coach Clausen, each of his 14 years as a head coach, he always rides me for, you know, the fact that I picked him low the previous year. Last year, I thought I had him. I picked him second in the ACC Atlantic. And so the only way that he beats me last year was to actually win the Atlantic and get past Clemson. So what does he do? They win the Atlantic and get past Clemson, and they're in the ACC title game. This year I picked him third. So, you know, odds are he'll probably finish second or something like that and be on me at the end of the year. But the Hartman thing is a big question mark coming in.
No question. Let's move to the Southeastern Conference with the SEC. What do you think there this year for folks listening?
I think it is a two-horse battle there, Alabama in the West and Georgia in the East. I think the third-best team in the SEC this year is Texas A&M. And it's not just because of this past year's recruiting class. Yeah, it was great, but guess what? Jimbo Fisher's had five great recruiting classes going through the team with Coach Fisher. They go three deep at every position in what I call VHTs, or very highly touted players. I think they're much improved at the quarterback position. Last year, their quarterback, Haynes King, went down to injury. This year, they've got Haynes King back. They also add in an LSU transfer and Max Johnson, so they're much more experienced at QB. The offensive line is much more experienced. The only thing, question mark, is the overall experience of the defense. They come in number 124 in my experience chart, and they have to play to Alabama on the road, and that's going to be tough. Alabama's playing with revenge. Other than that, I think A&M's the third-best team in the SEC. But Alabama, second-best offense in the country, led by the Heisman winner in Bryce Young. Perhaps the best defense in the country, led by the best defensive player in Will Anderson. They're going to be a double-digit favorite in every single game this year. And with Georgia, while they lose a lot off the defense, I mean, eight draft picks are gone, five first-rounders. That's tough to replace. But last year, they only allowed 10.2 points per game. This year, my computer calls for them to allow 16, which is still among the best in the country. And offensively, Stetson Bennett's got a national title under his belt. They've got the best tight end room in the country and a loaded offensive line. I've got Georgia a double-digit favorite in every game. So I've got Georgia and Bama meeting for that SEC championship game, and hopefully it'll be just like their games were last year.
They were definitely instant classics, as they say. And Phil, as far as the Sun Belt is concerned, we're trying to move around as fast as we can. Sun Belt, the Fun Belt, as they call it, a lot of great teams, and it looks like the Sun Belt has gone from what used to be a joke. The joke was they created the conference so the SEC would have another chance for a win to go to bowl games, and now they have really done a nice job with the conference realignment and the conference expansion, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, that East, I mean, you mentioned the SEC, ironically. I think everybody knows that the SEC West is the strongest conference in college football, but another highly competitive division is the Sun Belt East. I mean, App State, Marshall, Coastal Carolina, Georgia State, Old Dominion, and James Madison, those are six teams all capable of winning it. You don't want to play in the East Division, but those six all do. They may beat themselves up this year, but I went with App State being the best team in the Sun Belt. They've got a veteran offense, veteran defense. Chase Bryce is back at QB. And I think when you look at App State this year, they've got the potential to win that. But that East is going to be brutal. I do think Louisiana prevails again out of the West. They're not as good as last year's team. They lose Napier to Florida. They lose a lot of talent off last year's squad. But they're playing in a more manageable division. So I've got App State playing Louisiana for the championship there.
What about for Conference USA? How do you think? I know they've lost teams. How do they, I guess, as a conference, but also how do they bounce back? And what do you think about the teams that will be in the final game?
Should be a competitive league this year. You know, Bill Clark stepped aside for UAB, which is a big loss. I thought he was a tremendous head coach. They still have the talent to win that conference. So keep your eyes on UAB this year. But UTSA, Jeff Traylor's doing a phenomenal job. He's got Frank Harris back at QB. He has grossly overachieved my expectations each of his first 2 years. I think UTSA is one of the front runners. And then the sneaky team to me is UTEP. Everybody's picking them 7th, 8th, 9th in the CUSA. They are strong at the line of scrimmage. One of the best offensive lines in the conference, one of the best defensive lines, a quarterback with a cannon for an arm in Gavin Hardison, a couple of capable backs with Awat and Hankins. I think UTEP's a very under-the-radar team this year that's going to surprise. And then Western Kentucky loses their quarterback, loses their offensive coordinator. Remember, they brought in a quarterback, offensive coordinator, and some receivers from the FCS last year. Now they have to replace them. They bring in a transfer from West Florida, which is a step below FCS, and Austin Reed. We'll see if he can duplicate what Bailey Zappe did last year. But I think those four are the top four teams in CUSA.
Want to mention, obviously, one of the we were talking to the athletic director last night at Eastern Michigan, Scott Weatherby. But how, as far as the MAC is concerned and all the MACtion, how do you feel about the MAC this year?
I think the MAC is making some strides. There's no doubt about it. You know, the canceling of the season and bringing it back in 2020, I think, hurt them. But this year you're going to see a very competitive West, as always. I mean, the West is the best division out there over the last couple of years. I think Toledo looks solid under Jason Candle. And then you look at Northern Illinois. And, you know, Coach Hammack, they just won the MAC title last year. But Coach Hammack felt that this year's squad's about a touchdown better than last year's. And I agree with him. I've gone over the team with him every single year. He's got 9 starters back on offense, 9 on defense. They are a better team than last year's MAC champ, which makes them dangerous. Central Michigan, Jim McElwain always does a tremendous job there. He, of course, has coached in the SEC with Florida. He's got Daniel Richardson back at quarterback. And then the nation's leading rusher last year, Lou Nichols, played for Central Michigan. I bet you a lot of folks out there listening didn't know that. They also have Kobe Lewis back at the running back spot, so they're loaded there. Western Michigan and Eastern Michigan rounded out. And then in the East, I think you're looking at a Miami of Ohio team that had some question marks, but they do have Brett Gabbert back. They've got some solid receivers, a deep set of running backs. Miami is my pick to win the East this year, being challenged by Kent State, Buffalo, and Ohio.
Big news out of the Big Ten, obviously, with USC, UCLA moving in future years. But how are things looking for the Big Ten this year?
Return to power for Ohio State. You know, last year they were extremely inexperienced, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, in games against ranked opponents last year, they allowed 31 points per game and 415 yards per game. I think the defense under Jim Knowles could be much improved. They got 3 Heisman contenders on offense. C.J. Stroud at quarterback, Travion Henderson at running back, Jackson Smith, Nick Jigba at wide receiver, and the offensive line loaded. It's probably the most athletic O-line they've had recently. Number one offense in the country, and they have my number 7 defense. I think they're a legitimate national title contender. Their biggest threat in their division is Michigan, and Michigan's got a cake schedule this year. They have a grand total of 3 road games before they travel to face Ohio State, and they're against Rutgers, Indiana, and Iowa. There's a good chance Michigan could be 11-0 when they travel to face Ohio State, but I have them, and Vegas both have Ohio State a 2-touchdown favorite in that game, so I think Ohio State gets the revenge on Michigan and wins that one at home. Now, the West is wide open in my mind. I can make a case for any one of 5 teams, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, Purdue. All those teams have a shot at winning the West. Iowa's got the toughest schedule. They draw both Ohio State and Michigan out of the East. Purdue's got the easiest schedule. Iowa might be the best team. Purdue might be the 5th best team. But all 5 of those teams have a shot at winning the West this year.
Let's move down the road, if you will, to the heart of the country with the Big 12. I guess there's more teams than that now. But how are you feeling about the Big 12 this year?
I think Oklahoma does return to form and gets it. Remember last year, their 2 losses, they played Baylor, which had basically everybody back, and they lost that game on the road. They played Oklahoma State, which had the entire defense back, plus a lot of veterans on offense. They lost that game on the road in a tough one, a tough late loss in that one where they blew a lead. Now they get both those teams at home, and over the last 3 years when they've had home crowds, Oklahoma's a perfect 20-0 at home, and they get both those teams at home. They're also on equal footing with them experience-wise as opposed to last year. So, and if you're worried about the quarterback situation, keep in mind Dylan Gabriel at UCF back in 2019, had one of the most potent offenses in the country. He led. His offensive coordinator was Jeff Lebby. Guess who his offensive coordinator is here? Jeff Lebby. Overall, though, the Big 12 very deep. I mean, even Kansas. Kansas is generally a throwaway game, but Lance Leipold's got that team on the rise. Last year, they beat Texas and nearly won their last two games. And that was with him just stepping in after spring practice. So I think you're going to see some upsets. The bottom half of the Big 12 is strong. The top half is strong. I like where the Big 12 is headed right now.
Obviously, one of the conferences tough this year with the news with UCLA and USC leaving in the next couple of years for the Big 10. How are you thinking about the Pac-12? How is that looking this year?
I think Utah is one of the surprise teams out there that nobody's talking about, but could very well find themselves in the playoffs. Strong at the line of scrimmage, both offensively and defensively. You look at their quarterback. He's a guy that Cam Rising took over after three games last year, and Utah is a completely different offense. They've got strong at the line of scrimmage, and when I look at their games this year, I can have Utah favored in every single game. It wouldn't surprise me if Utah ran the table and actually made it to the playoff this year. Probably the two biggest contenders for them, USC. I think Lincoln Riley's done a phenomenal job there, hitting the recruiting, transfer portal, bringing in Caleb Williams and Mario Williams, the quarterback and wide receiver from Oklahoma, Travis Dye, 1,000-yard rusher from Oregon, Jordan Addison, the Biletnikoff winner, Shane Lee, started 13 games at linebacker for Alabama. Ton of transfers coming in. I think USC is my number one most improved team in the country. And then Oregon. The one thing I want to point out about them is Mario Cristobal did a phenomenal job recruiting at Oregon. It's a talented team. And while there are question marks at QB, Bo Nix is probably a step up from Anthony Brown last year. I think Oregon is a team to contend with in the Pac-12 as well.
How about the, I think the last conference we haven't covered, the Mountain West? How are things there this year?
I think Boise State finally lives up to their potential. Last year they had a first-year head coach, lost some games early in the year, played better in the second half of the year. Andy Avalos knows how to win, and they've got the schedule to get there. They do have to play Air Force on the road, which is going to be tough. But my concern with the Air Force is they've changed the blocking rules where you no longer can use chop blocks.
Right.
I wonder how that's going to affect the Air Force on the course of the year. I've got Boise winning the Mountain. And in the West, I'm going to go with Fresno State. It's great to see Jeff Tedford back. He had to step aside a couple years ago due to health reasons. He's healthy again, and he takes over a pretty talented Fresno team led by Jake Haener, one of the more underrated quarterbacks in the country. So I see Boise and Fresno on a collision course for the Mountain West title game.
With a couple minutes we have left, we obviously have a game in Provo against BYU. I know they're one of the best teams in the country. They and also Notre Dame, how are you feeling this year about those two teams being in it?
Yeah, Marcus Freeman is, you know, a breath of fresh air, I think. He's exactly what they needed. Brian Kelly been there a long time. Freeman comes in with enthusiasm, knows the defense. They have one of the top defenses in the country. They've got weapons on offense. Notre Dame's a two-touchdown underdog against Ohio State. I think they play the Buckeyes close. They do have to play Clemson at home at USC. But I think Notre Dame's a legitimate playoff contender. And then how about Kalani Sitake? You go back to last year. You know, 2 years ago they had a softer schedule, so they did well. They went 11-1. No, last year they had to play a bunch of Power 5 teams. All they did was go undefeated against the Pac-12 and even knocked off the Pac-12 champ, Utah. And that was with a team that had only 11 returning starters. This year, how about 19 returning starters coming back, all 11 on defense? They now have a veteran quarterback in Jaren Hall. They go from number 119 on my experience chart all the way up to number 5. This is a loaded team that's even added a couple of quality transfers, like Gabe Judy Ilali at Vanderbilt, the cornerback, Christopher Brooks from California, running back, and they've got Oregon and Snow College transfers on the offensive line to go along with their 19 returning starters. Only 13 Letterman lost from last year. That's a heck of a BYU team, and BYU gets that one at home. For the record, I've got BYU a 2-touchdown favorite in that game.
And lightning round, I know we're running out of time. Do you have any surprise favorites or teams that are under the radar, diamond in the roughs, if you will, before we let you go?
Yeah, I'll throw two of them out at you. One of them is Pitt, which I think, despite losing Pickett and despite losing Addison, still have a shot at a playoff spot. If you're looking for a non-top 10 team that can actually contend for a playoff spot, they have my number two rated defensive line in the country. I really like Keaton Slovis at the quarterback slot. And the only game I have pinned underdog in is their final game against Miami. If they win that one on the road, they could very well sneak into the playoff if they can get past Clemson in the ACC title game. So keep your eyes on them. And then one that's really stuck out to me due to the media polls would be Auburn. Auburn is pick number seven in the SEC West. And a lot of folks are saying, you know, Brian Harsin, a lot of players left. He must be running a toxic situation. That's not the case at all. I've been doing this for 28 years. I've seen a lot of first-year head coaches come in, a lot of players leave, and that's a good sign. They get rid of the bad apples. The players that are left are bought in, and I think that's the case with Auburn this year. And plus, the narrative would be completely different on Auburn had Tank Bigsby not run out of bounds against Alabama and they held on to win that game. They would have had that big win over Alabama under their belt, the winning season. So they're way under the radar right now. I think they open up 5-0 when they go face Georgia, so keep your eyes on Auburn this year.
All right, and Phil, one thing obviously we'd like to do before we let you go, obviously, is to promote the magazine. Thank you for all the great content. You help us out with our one of our preps that we'd like to do is look at the magazine, preparing for our broadcast for our show. How can people get the magazine?
I appreciate that, Dave. The magazine's available at Barnes & Noble, Books a Million, Walgreens, Walmart, Publix, Myers. It's all over the place. We actually had to print it in two runs this year. The first run went exclusively to Barnes & Noble, but now it's hitting everywhere. So stop by, 352 pages, three to four times the amount of information any other college football preview. We also have a digital version online, which is updated with any changes that have happened since we printed the magazine. You can get that at philsteele.com, S-T-E-E-L-E.com. And then make sure you check out Phil Steele Plus and my new weekly newsletter, Inside the Press Box, all at philsteele.com.
We definitely will. You know that we're all fans. All four of us here on this show are. Phil, thank you so much. When we're talking to you, the time goes by very fast every single year with the annual visit. Thank you so much for all that you do for college football, and we appreciate the time and look forward to talking to you again next year.
Sounds good. It was a lot of fun talking football with you today, Dave. Always enjoy our conversations, my friend. Yeah, yeah, yeah. My heart is purple and gold. I'm a pirate down to my soul, and I don't back